Welcome in, special edition of That SEC Podcast. We're back with another edition of Marler Monday. What's up, buddy?
Oh, man, not much. not much going on over here in Baton Rouge.
Right, so you're on location, Brian Kelly. I didn't see you get the video of him driving away. I don't know why people post that, but it is what it is. Brian Kelly's ass is out. Gamecocks choked away. Bamba, well, I guess you kind of like that a little bit, but probably not really. Man, but let's go with the big story, though. Brian Kelly out, Nick Saban in.
First off, it's Chase the Dragon, not Ride the Dragon. I maintain you have to make the call. Like you have to make the call and just like have him tell you no, which he probably would. But yeah, I mean, I make him at least say, I think this is going to be a good one. Why are you on suicide watch, Chase? Oh, Missouri. Tough. Yeah. I think you at least make him say no. It's wild how all this started, because it's like you kind of felt like it was going to be a good year. I kept saying going into the season, Bama was 8, LSU was 9, and that was like pretty much what every single publication had. And one of the things I kept looking at was like, you know, I don't know if they are like going to be the 9th best team in the country. It was too early for that. I don't know if that was the case. I felt very confident, and honestly, I still do, that there were not 9 or not 8 more talented rosters than LSU. And what they spent on the money in the portal, what they spent on the roster in general, you have back-to-back classes, or 3 straight classes that are in the top 10 from a recruiting standpoint. You got to get the number 2 portal class, and you spend all this money on this one roster, and now you're 5-3, and you still have to play Bama and then Oklahoma on the road. That's a tough pill to swallow, man. That's a tough pill to swallow. And I knew there were changes coming Monday or on Sunday morning. I did not think that they'd be Brian Kelly.
Hey, shout out Brandon MacGyver, gave us $10. Cocktober's dead forever. Is it dead, or has it just gone limp on us?
It almost came back to life. Almost from 6 to midnight against Bama on Saturday. That was wild. That was wild. Watching that game, it was maddening. It like as good as it was to see South Carolina finally figure out some of the things offensively, Mike, it was almost still more annoying to see them have success, because it's like, dude, this is what we've been fucking saying to do for all season. Like, Shula, throw the ball deep every once in a while to Nick Harbor. Figure out a way to get Lenore Sellers in the run game. Run the option a little bit. Do some things differently. Get some guys in motion. I kept screaming for them to take some of these like skeleton concepts of what Vandy does, which is like you're basically a power triple option team where you have a receiver in jet motion constantly. Then you're figuring out a way to fake it to him, pull the ball out from his belly, and then go run with the running back like in an option route or option pitch or whatever on the like near the sideline at the corner, whatever you want to fucking say. I'm very tired, Mike. Very tired of the past 3 days.
Why? What happened?
Well, Brian Kelly getting fired was a pretty all-day event for me yesterday. Because we were sitting there since 7:30 a.m. trying to cover that. But no, I think it was just one of those things where it's like they finally started doing all those things, and it was great to see. They had a lot of success doing those things against Bama, but it was also like, what? Where the fuck has this been? It's not like the personnel has changed. It's not like you got some – like they were the healthiest they've been all season. They got some players back, especially on the offensive line, which was really, really impressive to see. And I thought it was a really impressive showing from South Carolina. I don't know how that happened. My God, man, Jeremy Bernard's awesome. It was a wild, wild game for sure.
Here's something I said all week, Chris. Much was made about the 4 ranked – wins for Bama in a row without a bye, which is, you know, credit to them. I'm not taking away from that. But I thought even in the Tennessee game, I saw a team that looked a little tired, or not on their best. And then you go a 5th consecutive, and this one on the road. I was all in on the Gamecocks to cover. I didn't think they could win, which they probably should have. Is it fair to say that probably had a lot to do with Alabama looking – yeah, less than elite?
Well, it's hard to go play that many ranked opponents in a row. And keep in mind, like I've been saying this since the start of it. Like, you got to play Georgia. You already got one loss. You have one more mulligan on the season, right? one of those things is true. And it was not the dime, but I mean, no, it was, it's like going up against Georgia is a massive, massive like hill to climb. The way they won that game was also like a lot, right? Like that was like a lot to get through and have to hold on for dear life in the second half. Then you got to play Vandy the week after. And I kept looking at after they beat Vandy and you had to go to Mizzou, I kept comparing that game to like South Carolina in 2010, where it's like you're off back-to-back wins. It's just like the same blueprint they had then. And you got a really good upstart offensive team that's zero injuries at the time, looked really good. And Missouri could have won that game if Bo Pribula sees a, what's his name, wide open on the sideline late in the game. And then Tennessee at home for the big game against like a heated rival. If this game was at home, like for Alabama, I think it would have gone much differently. But I think it was that. That's where I told you this to you last week. It's like, I mean, DeBoer has 14 losses to FBS opponents. 12 of them have come against on the road. Yeah, 12 have come on the road. 11 have come against unranked opponents. 7 have come when he is a double-digit favorite, and that is like that's been the MO on beating him. So all those boxes were checked for South Carolina. It just didn't result in a win. And I also think there's this part too, man. There's no way you look at Alabama, what they did for four straight weeks. It's never happened in SEC history where you look at what they did there and then say, this win, which was an ugly, disgusting win. It was, they were down 7 with 3 minutes to go. They won by 7. Or they were down 8 with 3 minutes to go and they won by 7.
Yeah.
Incredible job. I think there's no way to look at this and say, like, that you weren't impressed by them being able to win it because they played bad enough to lose. And I think that last year's Kalen DeBoer team would have lost this game. I would venture to say maybe even some of those Nick Saban teams in his later years would have lost the game as well. So it was a really good job.
You see what he's doing, folks? He's already lining it up to bash LSU for hiring Saban. So let's get back to that.
How'd you get that out of there?
Yeah, Saban would have lost that game. That sorry sack of shit. All right, but sorry to be all over the place, but we got the donation. So shout out Kyle Deaton. He gave us a donation too. This will tie into LSU. But can you explain how transfers work when a coach is fired? Is it open season for the other schools? It used to be, but they've since changed that rule, Kyle and Cousins. So the new rule is like right now, LSU, they just fired their coach. No one can transfer from LSU. Now, the new rule is, let's say they turn around and hire Nick Saban tomorrow. Saban has 5 days to talk to the team and try to figure out who he wants to keep, who he, and you know, with the portal, it's not necessarily up to Saban, but just Saban has 5 days to make the pitch, meet the team, and then the players can exit the portal. Right. So you have to wait for a new coach to come in. He's got 5 days, and then it's open portal season. But what's the rumors down there? Obviously Nick Saban is kind of a joke, but the realistic candidates for LSU that I know it's way early and who the hell knows, but what's the popular buzz in Baton Rouge here?
What's kind of wild is there's not really a a lot of info on that yet. Like the Brian Kelly stuff, like, dude, we were told a week ago through like the same sources that from yesterday, which was, hey, you know, they have no appetite to pay a $53 million buyout. And then they lose to A&M and the way they lost to A&M, and it became very quickly a much different story. And you got to think, it's not like they played at noon. It's not like they played at like, I mean, that game ended at whatever time. And the next morning is when the word started to kind of matriculate around that it was going to be that day and it was going to be over. And so
nice word choice,
right? Matriculate, pretty good. Earlier I tried to say rapport and I said repertoire, and which I'm pretty sure might not even be a word, and it was really bad. No, but I think that who you go after, like I don't know, just with the way social media is now, I think that anyone, let me first start saying, anyone that says that James Franklin is not a viable option for Florida, for Auburn, for Kentucky, if that job comes open, for LSU, I don't know how else to say this without being mean, but since it's this show and I'm allowed to be mean, especially after reading the comments in here, if you think that James Franklin is not a good enough coach to coach any of those jobs, you're a fucking idiot. I mean, like, you can sit here, and if you want to sit here and say, well, he never won the big one. Okay. You know why those schools are in the position they're in? because those coaches not only didn't win the big one, but they also couldn't get fucking close to 10 games, a win every single, or winning 10 games every year. Auburn hasn't done that. Yeah. Kentucky damn sure hasn't done that as of late. Florida has barely sniffed it. So it's like, you know, I think that you also have to, when you start looking at the way the game is now, you also need to look at my SAT score is a 1240. I got a 620 on math and 620 on verbal. So you have to also start looking at things like James Franklin was also able to turn around Vandy pretty quickly and win back-to-back nine or seasons of nine wins. And then other things that people forget about with Penn State, especially, is that Penn State job, like, that was the worst the program has ever been for a number of reasons. Some of them were horrible, right? And I thought they should have gotten the death penalty. So for him to be able to dig that program out of that into a national consensus top five, top 10 program, I thought was really impressive. In my opinion, and again, I have no info on who they're like initially looking at. I know that Bet Online has the best odds of John Summerall being named.
How about that?
I'm not.
His silence is an affirmation. I'll
speak. Comment on that for $1.99.
We need 10 more dollars, and yeah, we will comment on who the biggest douches are. But hey, not to go completely off the rails here, but shout out our buddy who's not a douche, John Neighbors over there, Locked On Razorbacks.
Great job.
He's, I don't know, technically reporting is the word, but was discussing on one of his recent shows that multiple people that he's heard from relay that Franklin is interested in that job.
Yeah.
I think that would be an absolute home run for Arkansas, don't you?
Yeah, agreed. I think LSU is the best job that's open. And I don't think, like,
how dare you, says Billy Napier.
I don't think that's really that up for debate, right? Like, I don't think it would be.
They're going to gator chop your wiener off for saying that. I mean, they think Florida's the better job.
So right now on Bet Online, I'm not saying they know everything, but they also know a decent amount in Vegas. But the odds for, this is what I was told just before I came on, I didn't look at it, but odds to land the Florida job, Eli Drinkwitz right now is at minus money on that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know how much you want to take that into account, like how big of a deal or how much weight you want to put into that. I will say that everything I've heard close to Florida before the LSU fire was that, Holly, what's up, dude? Is that a woman he's with?
He says all these teams are firing their coaches for records Kentucky fans would build a statue for.
For sure. For sure. No, I think the thing with Florida is I was told before the fire, the firing of Brian Kelly, that 70-30 was the kind of the percentage odds, I think, that people close to the Florida situation felt that they had for Kiffin going there. They seemed to think, be very confident that Kiffin would go there. Now, me personally, I think that Ole Miss is a better job right now than Florida. I know what Florida has been. I know what they can be, but they're not there right now. And they're also not great at a lot of things in terms of, like, from an administrative standpoint, like we talked about last week. The other thing, what's up with my obsession over body parts today? What did I miss? I say the belly parts.
I think they're talking in the chat.
Oh, my bad.
And Brodo says every day.
LSU is the best job that's on there. And I think that if Kiffin, you make the call to Saban and just see if there's any fucking interest at all. I would honestly make the call and then see if you have any interest in even being a part of the search. Like, he will probably say no to both of those things, but it doesn't hurt to ask. And especially now, he has gone out of his way to do nothing but praise the LSU situation, say he admitted that he made a mistake in leaving there and all that kind of stuff. John Summerall at LSU or from Tulane is the one that has the best odds right now. That's followed by Joe Brady, who's the offensive coordinator at in Buffalo, and then obviously used to be the passing game coordinator here. Now, if you talk to anybody close to the program around here, there's a much different story from the inside looking out versus the outside looking in, which is like Brady was very helpful on that team, but he got a lot of credit that might not necessarily have been as deserved with how great that offense was, having to do with him versus the coordinator, Ensminger. So, it'll be interesting. I think the short list for me is I go after Summerall. I think he would be great, especially coming from Tulane already in the state. I make Kiffin my first choice. I make Kiffin say no. And after he says no, I add at least 3 more million per year on that number and say, what about now? And like, dude, you have to nail this hire. You cannot fucking go small game hunting on this and figure out like, well, this guy's going to be able to, like Clark Lee, I think there's been people that have talked about him. I don't think he's an option. Brent Key, I don't think he's an option. I love both those coaches. I would love if Brent Key wanted to leave Georgia Tech to come here, even though I love Georgia Tech. I don't think he wants to leave his alma mater. And that's the other part too, Mike, because there's a lot of coaches that like you, like that would be on a short list for a lot of these schools, Clark Lee and Brent Key especially, that are in situations now that aren't better jobs, but jobs that mean more to them specifically.
Mm-hmm. Shane and I played a little game last night, Chris, after this was made official. How many SEC coaches, current SEC coaches, would leave their current school for LSU? And we said the ones that would not, Elko at A&M, DeBoer at Bama, Kirby at Georgia, and maybe Steve Sarkisian at Tech. Probably Steve Sarkisian, but that's probably the list, don't you think?
Yeah, I would think so.
We were a little bit torn on Venables, but and then I said, well, hell, LSU would not offer him, so it don't matter.
No. I don't think Stark would leave for LSU. I do think if like here's the thing people forget about with Texas. That's a pretty toxic environment for coaches. Like they I'm not saying that Sark is on the hot seat at all, but if something happens where if something happens where they lose this week, even if Arch is out, like they are going to Texas is delusional enough to think that they are the best job in the country and are superior to everyone, no matter what their record says, no matter what like where their ranking is, any of that kind of stuff. It may be the best job in the country, but when things start to go a little bit south, it definitely is not. And LSU is a much better landing spot, I think, especially for Sark than maybe people realize. I don't think he would leave necessarily, but I also think that it's a better job long term. I just like Texas. They'll give you all the resources, but there's very few places you're going to win at when they are so fucking involved in all the decisions that they should not be involved in.
Mm-hmm. Hey, real quick, I want to shout out all these excellent cousins like the legend JR gifted another membership.
Legend cousin JR has done it again.
Thank you, JR. Gifted to Colin. Colin, welcome. Tam B also joined. Tam, welcome. We appreciate you. Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin ain't going anywhere. Tam, sorry I said that. Cameron, anyone know where that crossroads is, Marler, so he could go sell what little bit of a soul he has left?
Dude, that's tough, man. That was a tough weekend. That sucked.
And Ryan Sosa became a member. Shout out, Ryan. We appreciate you. He says, Les Miles back to LSU. And then Stephen Up, tell Marler I found another source for my dime. He's no longer needed.
That's fair.
I can't believe Jeff Lebby is maybe because most people don't give a shit about Mississippi State, but I can't believe he's not facing more heat for one horrible coaching job after another against Texas, against Florida. I mean, I guess he's got these teams competitive, so I guess we're going to give him A for effort. I didn't think that's what we were doing in the Southeastern Conference. I thought you had to win some football games. But I'm surprised he still has a job. And then I am stunned. How stunned are you, Chris, that old Hugh Freeze still has a job and Brian Kelly doesn't?
Auburn might be stuck with him. I'm shocked to answer your question. I am shocked. Also, I want to go back at some point after I answer this to that Chris C. comment. Mm-hmm. Even if LSU nails this hire and the coordinators, it will still be some years where they're competitive. So let's circle back after this, after the Hugh Freeze thing. I think Auburn's in a bad spot here because Auburn needs to know what their worth is and stay in their lane on this one, because I don't think that they're anywhere close to being in the running for Lane Kiffin. I don't think they're anywhere close to being in the running for some of the other like bigger names. You need to hinge your hopes if you're going to fire Hugh Freeze, which you should have already done. Like you should have already done. You should have gotten out ahead of this whole thing and been the first to the table. But instead, now you've sat here and watched other programs that you cannot compete with. Like LSU is a better job. They have more resources. They have better recruiting and fertile recruiting grounds. They will put more money into the program than Auburn will. And the leash is probably a little bit longer here at LSU. And again, it's just a better job. It's a better job. So is Florida, and so is Penn State. So now, if you're Auburn, you need to go all in on a name that is not necessarily the number one choice for everyone else. Like, it needs to be John Summerall, even though he should be up there for a lot of people. I think there's going to be some big name programs that are probably going to look at this and say, well, I don't know if he's a big enough name for us. It's a G5 guy. We saw that worked out last time. G5 coach from, you know, the state of Louisiana, even went to the SEC with the Billy Napier thing. We need to have a proven guy, blah, blah, blah. But where Auburn's in trouble now is that you might have to hold on to Hugh Freeze no matter what, because you cannot compete in this market in the offseason with the other teams that are going to be trying to get coaches if you don't already have a plan in place. And I don't think that they're going to be able to compete with that. And I think that it's going to, you know, Hugh staying there, I don't think is great long-term, but also maybe things turn around with now they have a new quarterback if they bench Jackson Arnold.
I mean, all that doesn't sound too promising to me. It sounds like we're just delaying the inevitable.
They are. But who do you go? I didn't mean to interrupt you, Mike, but I'm saying, who do you go get, though? Who do you go get?
I mean, if you gave me about 5 minutes, I could come up with a list of 50 better coaches than Hugh Freeze.
Yeah, I don't think it would take you that long.
Hey, how about that? You know, if we're just going to get on the crazy train, one name that I hear there is legitimate interest, Chris, much more realistic than Nick Saban returning to LSU, but another famous coach returning to the SEC to a post he won big at.
Oh.
Urban Meyer to Florida. Apparently there is mutual interest. Thoughts on that?
I mean, Urban Meyer is still one of the best coaches, I think, in football. I don't know if he would do it or not. But I mean, like, dude, like, yeah, listen, the attention to detail, the I don't give a shit about anything besides winning attitude. I mean, I think he would be successful no matter where he goes. Not Jacksonville, not the Jaguars. I think he would be successful anywhere he goes. I mean, he's listen, when it was Saban, even when Saban was at his highest, everyone knows that he was like right under him in terms of best coaches. And you can, you know, maybe later on, once Kirby started to get things going, you could move him down. I Dabo won championships. I get that. But like, there's no part of me, and I don't think any other person that watches football that would have looked at a matchup between Dabo and Urban Meyer and said, I want Dabo as my coach. He won some games against them, but I don't think that would have been the case for anybody.
Right. And I don't know if you buy into this, but you know, there's a lot of people always say you should make the hire that your rivals least want you to make. Right. And I think he would be the winner for that for Florida, don't you think?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, listen, can you imagine those fucking matchups between him and Kirby Smart for between Georgia and Florida? I mean, I think he would make them instantly relevant. He also knows how to win there. I think he knows how to win there. I don't know why he left Ohio State in the first place. I don't remember. I honestly just don't even remember at this point. But I think he knows how to win games. He knows how to win at a big place. He also might just be itching to get out of a fucking, you know, big noon kickoff thing and get back into it. Because I think that he also sees this as a time now where it's like, all right, listen, if we're allowed to pay for shit, because like he was running an incredible program that any other coach would have probably had going off the rails. Like besides maybe Barry Switzer, besides whoever the coach was at SMU, besides maybe whoever was at Miami in the 80s. Like the stuff that was going on with those like late 2000s Florida teams was the stuff of like, I want to say legends, but it's also like some terrible shit that happened. But like, he's a very good football coach.
Right. Hey, I like this question from Ryan. Should LSU go with a young coach in this new era? Because that's working. You look, yeah. I mean, all across the sport, Dan Lanning, of course, Clark Lee's a younger guy. John Summerall, hell, I know Kirby's been in it a while, but he's relatively a young guy, and you see it all over the NFL. I know this isn't the NFL, but those guys are having a ton of success as opposed to some of these older guys. Could you see that at all?
I could. I don't know if it necessarily happens. I think that the idea that like going to get a young guy like Kenny Dillingham is a name that's been like I've seen people. Appreciate it, JD. I've seen people mention his name. I haven't heard his name mentioned at all. I haven't really seen his name too high up on lists. I thought that'd be a good spot for Florida. I don't know why they haven't. I haven't heard more about that. Kenny Dillingham's a good coach. I mean, he's a good coach, and obviously what he did at Arizona State. I also feel like he's a good fit at Arizona State, and I think he also – didn't he also play at Arizona State?
He did, but apparently there's a lot of issues with the NIL and everything like that, you know? So, again, do you want to win or do you want to coach where you played at and struggle, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know the answer. I do think his name should be mentioned a lot more, and I'm surprised it hasn't been. The young coach thing, I get. I think Eli Drinkwitz is a name that my honest opinion about him coming to LSU is I think he would do – I think he's a great coach that would do well. I don't think people take him seriously. Like because of the way he looks, because of the school he's at, people refuse to just admit that Eli Drinkwitz is a great coach. Like we will praise Clark Lee for going to Vanderbilt and doing all these things because it's Vanderbilt or whatever, but we talk about Mizzou the same way we talk about Vanderbilt for a long time. And I think if he was bald and looked like a little bit of a dildo and was fucking jacked and could bench 400 pounds like Clark Lee could, he knows what he looks like. I love him to death, but he knows what he looks like. But if he looked like that, I don't think that we would have these conversations. But since he's got the comb over and the glasses and he's kind of a little bit nerdy, I don't know if LSU would take him seriously enough to hire him. But I think he'd be a great coach no matter what. And he also might just end up being a great coach still at Missouri if he thinks he can win there.
Right. Well, that's a good transition to that heartbreaker where they fall 17-10. Vanderbilt, the dream season continues, but they don't want to hear it because it makes it even more painful, I would think. But I think Missouri outplayed them, you know. But Vanderbilt made the key plays, and I don't know. I don't think the season is lost by any means for old Missouri, but they got to win out if they want to make the playoff. And Vanderbilt marches on. Win. Oh, an ugly win, still a win. And now they got a huge matchup against Texas. What's your thoughts on this one?
On Texas Vandy or Vandy Mizzou?
Vandy Mizzou first.
So I thought it was a good game. I thought everything you just said was spot on. I mean, like, it felt like Missouri won this game. It felt like Missouri should have been ahead. It also absolutely fucking sucks that, man, losing Prabula, even though he hasn't played that great as of recently, like, losing him, and now, like, dude, this is a team that has been, like, arguably, like, the least hampered by injuries of any team in the conference. Every time you look at the availability report, right, every week, it's two players, and it's Sam Horn and whoever the kicker was. And it just sucks that now, like, Cormula's done. And he's done for the year, most likely, on that weird, wonky little play on the third and one. There were a couple of calls I thought that didn't go super great for Missouri that probably could have. And again, credit Vandy. I'm not taking anything away from that win. But Mizzou on the goal line somehow not coming up with points, but not being able to leave that drive with your starting quarterback. It felt a lot like that Ole Miss season where Treadwell was going in to score against Auburn, broke his leg. And now you lose your best player and you also lose this game. And it's like, fuck, like, where do you go from here? I thought Missouri played well enough to win that game. They probably should have. I worry about where they go the rest of the year. Cause Zollers.
He looked good. I thought.
I did too.
He's got A&M at home, 2 weeks to prepare. Mississippi State at home, at Oklahoma, and their tremendous defense. And then Oklahoma and Arkansas on the road. So, yeah, I mean, it's Matt Zoller's time. And Shane is, like, done with Prabula. He's like, well, Zoller's is he's better anyway. But I think it's, you know, throwing him in there. There's no film on the guy. He looked promising. He made some big-time plays. No reason not to be excited about him. But also, we should not discredit what Bo did for this football team either, you know?
I agree. I think that what sucks is you're again, you're out of mulligans after the second loss. Like there's just no chance that I'm not saying there's no chance the 9-3 team makes the playoff. I'm saying there's no chance you feel confident that your team is 9-3 is going to make a playoff after what we saw about last year. After we saw last year, I think honestly, Mike, you could look at this 8-4. If they go 8-4 and they lose to A&M and Oklahoma, you could probably sell me on the idea that the 8-4 season might have been more impressive than even the 10-win season they had last year, just because of, like, you know, it felt like there was so much momentum, and then all of a sudden it's like I still think about this team as one of the better teams. I think from a matchup standpoint, man, they're a nightmare to deal with defensively. I think the best combination of edge rushers of any team in the conference, which is saying a lot, man, because there are some really good ones. South Carolina, Auburn has there's several more, I'm sure, LSU. But, I mean, it feels like A&M, it feels like that this is – that's a tough uphill battle to go out and try to win you football games with a true freshman quarterback. And then, you know, just insult to injury. So now you have three players out for the year instead of two. And it's your first string quarterback, your second string quarterback, and then your first string kicker. And oh, by the way, the kicker also is being replaced by a true freshman as well.
And then thoughts on this, you know, I guess is the best game now in the conference this weekend. Number 9, Vandy at number 20, Texas, with Texas a slight favorite. I'm not honestly not surprised by that, but I think undoubtedly Vanderbilt's been the better team this year.
Yeah. I mean, I get them being a 2.5-point favorite. It is. It'll be interesting because Arch missed practice today, and now there's talk that Matt Caldwell, the kid from Troy, might start this weekend. He's only thrown 11 passes all year, which is kind of shocking to me, especially with how they used Arch last year behind Quinn Ewers and versus now. I mean, like going into the month of November and having 11 passes and you know, on the season is not ideal. I don't know how long he would even be out. It'd probably just be the 1 week if he even misses the game. I don't know. But Vandy's legit, man. And I think it's fun because I think most of the SEC has been involved in these like joining hands across the league and this like unison and then unity of trying to hate watch Texas into losing. And they've come up short the past couple of weeks. I just like Vandy as a much better team, man. Now, maybe I shouldn't say much better because they don't have the talent. And we've seen Diego on the road and we've seen like him struggle. But I think that one of the things that was really important for this game against Texas happened to Vandy this past week against Mizzou. And that is this team learned how to win under Clark Lea and Diego Pavia, especially over the last season and a half plus, right? Dating back to the start of 2024, they have finally learned how to win. That's really tough to do for some programs, especially coming into like a new head coach's tenure. I'm not picking on anyone, but like Mississippi State is having to go through those struggles right now. It happens almost to every team, right? Like you have to learn how to go fucking win games. Vandy learned how to do that. But what they learned this week against Mizzou is they learned how to win without playing anywhere close to their best football. And going into a game like that on the road against Texas, I think that has got to be as bad as they played. That's got to be a confidence boost, man.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what does it say to you about the Commodores? Just the fact that, you know, kind of like you were saying, they're winning ugly here. But now, once again, they're going to be able to play that disrespect guard, mm-hmm. which I think will play well in that locker room. I don't know if that truly has anything to do with it. But we got that angle. And then maybe this has completely died down. But, I mean, it blew up on Saturday, right, with the Sark interested in the Titans.
Yeah,
he was adamant that was like fabricated bullshit. Even his Jimmy Sexton released a statement, which they never do. But what was your thoughts on all that?
You know, I think he'd be fine in the NFL. I think if any of that was true, and I don't know any of it to be true necessarily, but if it was true, my immediate thought would be an assumption would be, well, he's getting frustrated with this season and he is at least keeping his options open. And my other assumption would be maybe he's doing that because he's so frustrated with how he knows the like the brass at Texas would be handling the situation if it goes worse, right? And so, hey, Vol State, love you to death. I'm not going to stop doing it. I'm just going to keep doing it. Like it's almost as annoying to comment on every time it happens. So I'll just cross my eyes the rest of the way. No, I think like the other part with him leaving is if he went to the NFL, I don't know. I mean, why the fuck would you want to go to the Titans job? Like maybe to work with Cam Ward? I don't know. But that's such a huge uphill battle. You've kind of reached the mountaintop. And for a guy that's been in coaching in college ranks for, you know, dating back to the early 2000s, I know he had a stint with the Falcons and all that kind of stuff, but like, and also keep in mind if for the people think he wouldn't be super successful, which would, I would probably be in that camp. He did have a top 10 offense with the Falcons in his first year. So I don't know. We'll see. I think that he's going to stay. I thought that was just a bizarre that article too, Mike, was like so little of it was about any of that him leaving to go to the NFL, and then the right. very end of it was like a hook that they just posted for social media, and it worked. But it's like that was not even close to being like the essence or core of what they were writing about.
Yeah, it's true. Because I did look at the article, and it was, I don't know, 1,200 words, and then like the last 100, there was like Sark may be interested in Texas or Tennessee. Yeah. But speaking of Austin, you know one thing we love about it, Chris?
What's that?
Pacho Outdoors. Go check them out. PachoOutdoors.com/SEC. That's how you get $10 off over at Pacho Outdoors. Chris, you would be you're always looking good, right? But you'd look a hell of a lot better if you went over to PachoOutdoors.com/SEC, got $10 off. Because what they got over there, they got denim, they got flannel, they got Western polos, they got Tough Thread, all the great gear for this fall. And they even got team-specific type gear, like the Nealon shirt, which I got in my closet over there. I'm going to get you a Nealon for Christmas, and you can burn that. And don't forget, Chris, the Poncho Promise. Free shipping, free returns, free exchanges to make sure it fits right. Poncho stands by every product they sell. So go check them out. PachoOutdoors.com/SEC. Link in the show notes to get you somewhere there. Hey, speaking of Kiffin, I mean, we bullshit all about Kiffin, what job he's leaving for and all this. We don't even talk about his damn team going all the road, whipping ass, another big win. They've virtually locked up, and we can't say locked up because he's lane whiffing. He'll whiff a game or two. But, you know, they look like a lock for the college football playoff. How impressive was this win for them Rebs?
Yeah, I thought it was really impressive. But, I mean, the way they did it, like, I want to go look through this. I haven't taken a a look at it yet, but I feel like wide and short, sure. I don't know what the record is for third downs faced in a game for Kiffin. I feel like 21 has to be pretty high up there with how high octane that offense is. But to go on the road against the best defense in the SEC, I mean, they were number one in every category: total yards allowed, total points allowed, passing yards allowed, and rushing yards allowed. To be able to go up and down the field on them the way they did and figure out a way to win that game, I thought was incredibly impressive. The other thing that I thought was so impressive, going 43% on third down was great. And Trinidad Chambliss didn't miss a beat, 368 yards. I mean, against that defense, like, if there's one thing you can hang your hat on for Oklahoma, it is that defense has been really good all year, no matter who they're playing. So I think it once again shows that Oklahoma is more than beatable, and they're very vulnerable. That was like a home game in a situation I thought kind of benefited them in a lot of ways, to where they should have been able to go out there with like a sense of urgency to go win that game. And they were catching Ole Miss coming off a loss with the Lane Kiffin rumors and all that kind of shit. And it didn't happen. Not only did it not happen, but I mean, like Ole Miss wanted going away, and I thought it was really impressive from Lane Kiffin. I agree with you. I don't think there's anybody else in the schedule that's going to beat them. I think they're in the playoff. I think that's also something that might hinder anybody trying to sign him from a coaching standpoint, because I do think, as much as Kiffin loves attention and Kiffin like is enjoying people being or seeking out his employment, right, I also think more than anything, he wants to fucking win a championship, get to Atlanta, and do the things that all these people, including you, just said, like, that you can't do, that you haven't done. And again, like, with good reason, but like, I mean, does Ole Miss know where fucking Atlanta is? I mean, like, I don't, the last time they were there was that TCU game, and it was over before it started. So it's like, I think him getting them to Oxford, or sorry, to Atlanta, is a really big deal to him.
And I don't know. Remember last year he said, we don't want to play in it.
I think he seems like the most mature version of himself this year, okay, and wants to just put it like, he wants to end as many bad narratives as he can. And so I like what he's got. And dude, going into the season, nobody had an easier schedule to manage than they did. But you also have to give him another thing with credit here too, is that the guy that's manning this offense is a guy that nobody wanted. And Kiffin brought in during the summer and turned into a fucking Heisman contender. And if he's not on the short list right now, I don't know what else needs to happen, because he's played his ass off and deserves to be in Manhattan. Now, I'll also say I don't know what fucking Kiffin was seeing in fall camp with Austin Simmons versus this, but I think it was really impressive the way they attacked that defense, the way they were able to get consistently good runs against them with Keelan Lacy. It was good.
And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, because I had a lot of A&M fans are on cloud nine, as they should be, only undefeated team in the conference. But they told me that you picked LSU.
I did. I did. I thought LSU, man, I sat here watching this team going into, like, well, first off, A&M had been on the road twice this year, and they gave up 40-plus points in both. They were going to Death Valley, a place they hadn't won since 2012 or whenever. It might have been before that. They haven't won there since they came into the league. And that defense, those numbers were just very, very different against good opponents and against games away from College Station. So, you know, I think there's that part of it. And the other part of it, too, is I just felt like at some point this LSU offense was too talented and too loaded to be this fucking bad. And I was wrong about that. Like, I was very wrong about that. And I thought that a defense that has been vulnerable at times, like you saw against LSU and you saw against Arkansas, again, both games on the road, I thought that they would be in a great situation where Brian Kelly had to win this game. And what A&M did to them was incredible. Like, it was incredible to watch. And I think A&M's a really, really good team. They are good enough to go 12-0, dude. They are good enough to go 12-0. I'm blown away by Mike Elko. And I said this last week. Give me all the hate you want about not picking them to beat LSU and all that kind of stuff. I will also say that I've been saying this for a couple of weeks. Mike Elko has made that a likable program, to where all of our little low-hanging fruit dumbass jokes about the Yell leaders and the weird cult things and all that kind of stuff. Like, I'm sure SEC fans are still going to be making those because it's in our nature. But that walkout, that fucking death march out from the locker room onto the field at Kyle Field with Kanye Power playing and like the whole fucking place getting ready to erupt, it has made A&M football really, really likable, really impressive. And I tell you what, man, like I love watching a team take on their identity of their coach. And Elko might be built like fucking Grimace, and that's fine. But like watching the edge rusher, and of course his name's escaping me right now. What's his name?
Cassius Howell.
Cassius Howell. That kid was awesome. Like, that, he is a psychopath, and it was awesome to watch. And then both of those receivers, Craver and Concepcion, were fucking incredible. And I tell you what, man. It's difficult to go win on the road in Death Valley, especially at night. Brian Kelly was like 20-2 in those games, or 20-1, I think, before this one. But the fact that they did that, and dude, the moment they had that punt return and it was 28-18, was there any part of you that thought like, well, this will still be a game? It was over.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been a hell of a lot worse. It was Marcel Reed had a couple picks, right? They had the block punt.
Yeah.
Now, again, we can't just eliminate all the good things LSU did, but it just felt like A&M was in complete control, aside from a mistake here or there.
Well, so one of my coworkers said this morning, and I didn't even think about it because I was blown away. I've seen that place empty out, but when they were winning, and watching them empty that place out, take over the fucking student section, watching Tommy Moffitt take pictures at midfield, that is fair. You guys were in Atlanta and you beat Penn State in that one game. Last time, Moffitt, you know, he was one of the first people that Brian Kelly fired. Hearing the stuff that they were doing in practice is it was awesome. Like, oh, he put up Brian Kelly's face on tackling dummies. Like, you could tell he wanted this one more than anyone. Like, those are the kind of things that band teams together. And so it was very obvious from that standpoint that this team was fucking ready and they were not going to have a letdown at any point. I don't know if anyone outside of College Station knew that was coming, but they sure as shit showed it on Saturday. But the other thing too, man, LSU blocked a punt. They got an interception inside like the 40-yard line and an interception in the end zone, and they still lost by 25 or 24. I mean, like, it could have been so much worse.
It could have been. And you know where the defense was really the worst? Kentucky. and yeah. There too. But man, Tennessee 56-34. Shout out. Give some love for all these Tennessee fans that are being so nice to you in the comments.
This made me so happy. This game made me so happy. It was so vintage Tennessee. And I'll tell you the main reason it made me happy is because I, against my better judgment, was like, you know what? I know all the numbers back me up on this, and I know it's come back to bite me in the ass against Alabama, and it came back to bite me in the ass against somebody else. But Tennessee on script is one of the best fucking...
It looks good.
It does. It's very full. It's one of the best fucking coaching like jobs in the country when they are on script. They are so good out of the gates. And I remember telling you this a bunch of times. I think going into last year, they scored first in like 33 of Josh Heupel's like 38 games his first 3 years as a head coach. I think that number was like 40 out of 52 or something like that. And still an outrageously impressive number. Maybe it was like 43 out of 52. I don't know. But like very, very impressive that what he's been able to do on script. Kentucky's not very good. And I think that I was looking for the game from Tennessee because I saw Vegas put the line at 8.5. I was like, that's fucking off. And then the first half spread, there's also no one better in the first half than Tennessee. I think they're like fourth in the country, 23.5 points per game. But under Heupel, no one has been better than them in the first half of games in the last 5 years. So them coming out and being a 3.5 point favorite and just fucking from jump putting it on Kentucky, I thought that's what they needed to do to start the back half of this season and come off a loss. So they did a great job. The other side of it too, Mike, I'll tell you, like, they're doing this again without their two starting quarterbacks, and that sucks. I don't know if they're going to play at all this year. But the other thing that was like a pretty big takeaway for me was, how about Cutter Bowley for the second straight week? And I know Tennessee's defense is not that great, but him being able to put up all those yards, and that's a week after he was 31 of 39 against Texas, it feels like that at least is something you can feel like to build off of at Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. Has Tennessee fandom reached a new level, Chris, where some of these, you know, other fan bases have been, where they can win 56-34 on the road, and Vol Twitter is like pissed. They are absolutely pissed. People need to be fired. People need to be held accountable for 6-2 in the conference. You got 3 home games remaining. I mean, 9-10 win seasons still on the table, but a lot of Vol Nation is pissed right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair. I think the way you lost Alabama was pretty bad. Yeah. I was shocked to see how many people were somehow blaming that on the refs solely. Like, they didn't give up 37 fucking points. That one guy, I can't remember his name, but he's like a big Tennessee writer. And all he did for like 3 days afterwards was like talk shit about how bad the ref was. I mean, like, no, man, Heupel's great. Heupel's yeah. great. He's going to beat Oklahoma's ass this weekend. And they're going to be, I think they're going to be right back into a playoff discussion. Like, bring up the schedule again. Because Mateer is going to get some yards against them, right?
Yeah.
Here's how Heupel is going to close the season, in my opinion. And I'll be very honest. I'm not hoping this happens, but I'm just telling you what is going to happen, okay?
Chris is hoping they go 0-4.
I would love it. I would fucking love it, okay? But, like, you're going to go beat Oklahoma, and that is going to be a big deal because you're going to now figure out a way. You're at home, and you're going to now figure out a way to get yourself back into the playoff, like, talk at 10-2, because your only two losses are to two teams that are almost certainly going to make the playoff unless some catastrophic thing happens to both. I would assume you're beating New Mexico State. I don't know. That Burt Reynolds guy in the logo, he might be pretty tough. Then you're going to go beat Florida. And that may not seem like a big deal because they have an interim coach and all that kind of shit, but you have beaten Florida in Gainesville 2 times since 1973. 2 times since 1973. So you're going to then have that to build off of, and then you get Vandy at home, and Vandy's going to come in with actually something to play, and Diego Pavia talking shit, because they're also most likely going to be in contention where they have 2 losses, maybe they have 1, and you're going to be fighting for a playoff spot in those games. So, you know, I don't see Vandy losing to Auburn. I don't see Vandy losing to Kentucky. Not saying it won't happen. That Auburn game will be tricky, especially if they're coming off a loss. But I think that you're going to go into that end of the year game against Tennessee or against Vanderbilt if you're Tennessee, and it's going to have a playoff spot on the line. And I think that he's going to get to 10-2 potentially again, or even if they're at 9 games, he's going to have a chance to go win 10 games once again. And that's with what he's done with Joey Aguilar. The idea that he would be on the hot seat is fucking stupid, or people don't like him. It's fucking stupid. I know Cherokee Chooch says beat our ass. LOL. We'll see, tough guy. Okay, I don't know. I'm not playing in the game, buddy, and neither are you. So I don't
that's you're not, Brent Venables, by the way.
Good football team.
That's Venables.
We'll see, tough guy. What? Like, listen, Oklahoma is not a very good football team. They have an elite defense, but it's also time we all have a conversation about John Mateer, and that dude's not that good. He's wildly inaccurate. He plays hero ball way too much. And if you want to get real fucking honest about what this Oklahoma team is, they beat a bad Michigan team at home early in the season with a true freshman quarterback making his first road start. They then beat a really bad Auburn team and needed all the fucking help in the world to do it.
And so, cheated.
I mean, and then so you had everything in front of you to be undefeated going in against Ole Miss and arguably playing with house money before the end of the season. But I will tell you this about the best thing I can tell you about Oklahoma. It's a story from when I played baseball in college. We went to go play a team that was ranked 5th in the country. We were ranked number 1 in Division II baseball. Georgia College and State University, Francis Marion, they had a kid on the mound that played in AAA with the Mets and Dylan Owen, blah, blah, blah. We go out in the first game, we lose 5-2. We're number 1 in the country. We hadn't lost like 19 straight games. We lose 5-2 and their crowd starts chanting overrated. And then we come out the next 2 days and we beat the fucking brakes off of them. We win the series, we go home. And I remember our coach looked at their fans after we're done shaking their hands and says, that's why you don't talk shit after the first game of a 3-game fucking series. Oklahoma, this is why you don't talk shit after playing the worst part of your schedule with like 6 straight ranked opponents at the end of the year. Like, you're a very good defense. Is there any part of you that thinks that John Mateer is going to go on the road and beat Alabama? Or somehow go on the road and get into a fucking shootout at Tennessee? You don't have a good enough offensive coordinator to do that. You don't have a good enough play caller to do that. And here's the other part, too. You want to get back to the Heupel thing about him being a good coach or not. Who's a better coach between Heupel and Brent fucking Venables? Josh Heupel.
Definitely Heupel. But they won't admit that. But, so, hey, that's a game. And you've already, I think it's going to be a lot more competitive than apparently you do. But is there another game on here that is that you think will be kind of sneaky good this weekend?
South Carolina, Ole Miss.
Cock November.
Cockvember. Itchyvember. I don't know.
Nut November.
Jack Burton said, I like Venables, actually. You like him so much that you didn't even spell his name right. So there you go. I think that Vandy game is going to be awesome. That game is going to be fucking awesome. I think it actually plays into Vandy's favor that they also love you, Jack Burton. Great picture. I think that Vandy, that playing into I think that plays into their favor a little bit. That Oklahoma-Tennessee game is going to be fucking great. Now, I'll tell you right now, Mike, I'm a little bit of a bitch when it comes to gambling, and I love to buy a point. If there's one thing about me, I love to buy a point. I love a teaser against my better judgment. I will buy a point for this Georgia game and put my fucking life's worth, like my net worth on that game. Georgia is a 7.5-point favorite coming off the bye against that Florida team.
Maybe they get the Napier bump. I mean, Florida's got some talent. They're banged up, but they got talent.
Yeah. Also, someone said Cockvember is on a bye week this year. Bye week was all one word. It was spelled B-Y week. So
shout out Roddy. He's all the way in Japan, man. That's how they spell it there. How about Mississippi State, Arkansas? I mean, literally somebody has to win.
You don't know that. I mean, there's hurricanes and tornadoes coming around right now. You don't fucking know that.
Kentucky at Auburn. Do they fire the coach immediately that loses?
If Kentucky wins that game, could you imagine?
I think they could.
Can you imagine how little of Hugh Freeze's fault that would be?
If Auburn can't run the football, they have nothing. They have nothing on offense. Now, they got a good defense, But you said it yourself just a little while ago. Cutter Bowley, he's heating up, man. I think he is a legitimate SEC quarterback.
It could be. We'll see. I mean, I will tell you the state and Arkansas thing. This is so tough because state is. I feel so bad for him. I just feel so bad for him, and I think that Arkansas has been like America's team for the past several years, and now it feels like state is kind of like that. This is the opposite of a hate watch. Like, I think if SEC fans could, they would want both of these teams to win. Like, maybe not Ole Miss fans, but like, it's just, and the way that Mississippi State is finding ways to lose. I was talking to one of my coworkers who's a big Mississippi State grad and fan today, was like, she was at the game on Saturday against Texas, and she was talking about how bad, it was, like the way it happened, the loss, they were up by 30 or they're up by 17 or whatever, and blah, blah, blah. And I just like, I forgot that they also lost to Florida in heartbreaking fashion. And then I also forgot the week before that, they lost to Tennessee in heartbreaking fashion. Mm-hmm. So it's been a tough stretch. I know I also want to say one more thing since I'm going to lash out at the final couple minutes here on your audience. Marlar Wisdom just talked me into double down on my OU winning bet. So here's the thing, Les, I will tell you this. I put up all my picks every week, Big Picks Energy. And we went 10-3 this week. We were up 6.4 units or whatever. Now a unit is exactly what I fucked your mom with. So there's that. And then also, that's a joke. It's inappropriate. It's a joke,
buddy. Junior Marlar making Monday more tolerable. Go Gators! Beat the hell out of Georgia. Junior.
Yeah. You know, honestly, I love if there was a way I could carve out more time in the week to get just fucking emotionally abused by the comments on a YouTube channel, I would do it. But Monday's all I can. Monday's all it's all I can stomach.
Yeah. Well,
sorry, Emily.
You have offended our lone woman we have in here.
Yeah, she's like tough to go with this audience. Also,
unfiltered, undivided.
Love it. Who's Berto Baggins a fan of?
Georgia, of course.
Locked On Your Mom is really good.
And his picture scares me.
Is it like a thumb from the guy? Is it like a Lord of the Rings if he was a thumb?
I think it's the lady from SNL. Remember back in the 90s? But
Cherry
it's
like, O'Terry? No, it's fucking... No, it's Frodo.
Oh,
no,
Frodo who's like melted you with double chin.
Cherry O'Terry? Or you thought it was... Not Cherry O'Terry. You thought it was the one who did the Wicked Smart thing?
Yeah.
Oh, that's like so offensive to her.
Well, hey, anything else before you want to destroy anyone or ruin their lives or anything like that?
I feel like there's got to be somebody that I want to be mad about, but I don't know.
Anything stand out from over the weekend that we didn't hit on?
I mean, I will say that I had last week. Let's talk about this for a second since Emily's here. I was really impressed with this from Auburn. You cannot start Jackson Arnold the next day. You cannot.
Yeah, when he threw that pick six, I thought it was done for him.
Yeah, that sucked. Like that was. I mean, like he cannot start. Pepper, dog's here.
He says that's Frodo after Samwise said.
Samwise. No, I have nothing else to say. Though I'm gonna go hang out with my dog because she's nice to me, and I appreciate it, Mike. As I say every week, enjoyed it. I'm gonna go try to regrow some thicker skin for next week, and I'll see you then.
And he's going to go cry. All right. So thank you, Marlar, for hanging out. Appreciate all the cousins. Shout out JP, who's shout outs go to Cousin JR, Brandon McGyver, Kyle Deaton, Cameron Williams, Candace Dickfit. That can't be a real name. Ryan Sosa, Steven Up, J Star, Chase Moore, Moments of Truth, Ethan, JD, and Junior. And most of all, you, JP, along with you, Marlar. Get the hell out of here. We'll catch you on the next one tonight. Steven Lassen, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central. Bye bye.
Bye, guys.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.